Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Ken Rudin, courtesy of member station KUT in Austin, Texas.
Good to have you on the podcast, Ken.
Glad to be here, Ron.
We miss you, of course, in Washington.
And
of
course, how is Washington?
Well, Washington is confused. Washington thought it knew who the 15 leading candidates for the Republican nomination for president really were just a few weeks ago. But now, coming out of, well, not exactly nowhere, but New Jersey and New York, we have the sudden appearance of a new juggernaut, the Donald.
Well, explain that to me. I mean, it can't be just the media elite who says that the Donald Trump is an embarrassment and a joke, because we're hearing people like Karl Rove saying that focusing on the birther issue is just insane. Michelle Bachmann, to her credit, says this is not what the Republican Party should be running on. And yet, you look at these polls that Donald Trump is either first or tied for second or very close to second. A lot of people say that, well, you know, this shows how weak the Republican field is. And ultimately, I don't think Donald Trump is going to be a factor at all. But explain to me why Trump's name is on the top of all these polls.
Let me throw out one possibility. One is that he has better name recognition than most of the Republican candidates, other than, say, Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin, possibly Mike Huckabee. And a second one is his novelty, that because we haven't been talking about him in these terms, suddenly to be talking about him raises a certain kind of just oddity factor that some people respond to and mention his name. And then I think the other thing you've already touched on is a factor, the birther question. While it's been dismissed by every serious person who's looked at it, including a lot of Republicans and even Republican activists and partisans, it still appeals to a certain group of people, perhaps a small minority, but enough of a group of people, enough in just raw numbers, that if you do a poll just about Republican candidates for the 2012 nomination, you get enough people to get up to 15-20%.
I wonder if it's even more than that in some respects. The fact is that regular politics as usual, just doesn't work. The conventional politicians, that just doesn't work anymore. And maybe you need somebody from outside the system. I mean, this is not as extreme as like a Ross Perot in 92, who I think part of his appeal was that he was not part of the system, the broken system. And certainly you can't say that Donald Trump is part of that system either.
No, that's right. And another thing the two of them had in common, not that I would take Trump as seriously as Perot, but they were both billionaires. And Perot was able to write checks, ultimately about $60 million, out of his own accounts so that he could be taken seriously as a presidential candidate, get on the ballot, and so forth. And I know, who knows what Donald Trump is capable of doing, but he, at least theoretically, is a billionaire, although there's a good deal of dispute about how much money he really does have. He could theoretically write enough checks to make himself some kind of candidate in the primaries or some kind of third-party candidate, if he were serious about any of this.
Well, Ralph Reed, who's on Talk of the Nation, you know, the former Christian Coalition executive director, former, in some ways, Republican conservative kingmaker, once close to Pat Robertson, he said on Talk of the Nation this week that he thinks that Trump is legitimate. And I said, wait a minute, back in 2000, Trump was talking about running for president on a pro-choice ticket. Ralph Reed says anybody who sees the light could be very serious. Don't we think that this is just setting up, you know, the final episode of The Apprentice of this year, where he says that, well, on further consultation, I may not run after all?
I still believe that that is the likeliest happenstance in all of this, that he comes out of it, that he says, well, I've really thought about it seriously, and I appreciate all the people who have said nice things, but I'm going to do other things with my life. That still seems most likely to me. There also seems to be a kind of seduction going on here in which he is taking himself more seriously week by week as people talk about him, including us. I mean, we've all been pulled into this, sucked into this. We're talking about the birth certificate issue again a year after most people moved on and dismissed it as a distraction, including most Republicans. So if he is pulling us all back to something 2 years ago, maybe he is having an effect beyond what even he himself ever imagined he could have, and that could be affecting his mind.
But I want to say one thing, Ron. That may be all true, but I think I have a new personal favorite in this campaign, and I'll tell you why. His name is Gary Johnson. He's the former governor of New Mexico. But what he did this week is startling. He actually said, I am declaring my candidacy for President of the United States.
No exploratory committee.
It wasn't exploratory committee. It wasn't testing the waters.
No plastic enclosure.
It wasn't a Facebook post. It wasn't a Twitter feed. It wasn't anything like that.
I think he said it in public.
But don't you remember when we were growing up, you know, when you were growing up in McKinley, that front porch campaign? No, when Bobby Kennedy made that dramatic announcement, when Ronald Reagan said, I'm going to challenge President Ford. I mean, these were dramatic announcements of candidacy. Now everybody's saying, I would like, you know, I'm going to shake the world by announcing an exploratory committee. Nobody declares anymore.
You can blame Gary Johnson. Okay, you can blame campaign finance reform for that and the FEC and all the regulations and all the things you have to do differently once you've declared your candidacy. And you can also blame the acceleration of the whole process, because those announcements that you just made oftentimes came very close to the first primary, not a year away.
Right. I mean, well, no, but actually going back a couple of years, a couple of cycles, people were announcing 2 years in advance. Mo Udall, he announced at least 2.5 years before the
1976.
Before the 76 campaign, right.
So that would have been 74.
Right. Exactly. He did announce
two years
Phil
earlier.
Crane, the former Republican congressman from Illinois, when he was running in 1980, I believe he announced in 78. So a lot in the old days, and in the recent old days, they were announcing 2 years in advance. Now it's still, but the fact This was a real declaration of candidacy, and it was pretty impressive in my book.
It's nostalgic.
Well, and it's legitimate. It's a, here's what I plan to do.
I know, but the listener is a very astute student of politics, and yet I would be willing to bet that the listener is unsure whether the listener can conjure a mental image of Gary Johnson.
Well, he's no. Let me put it this way: if you're looking at the previous governors of New Mexico, he's no Jerry Apodaca. Okay,
that's true.
You know, I mean, who is?
True.
But I'll tell you, Gary Johnson is. He's for the decriminalization of marijuana. He was against the war in Iraq from beginning. He says that the Republicans are guilty of over. You know, just as guilty for the financial decline of this country as the Democrats are, which makes me think that this guy could wind up as a Libertarian Party nominee in 2012.
That's exactly right, the Libertarian Party. I was going to say, if Ron Paul decides not to run and his son Rand Paul decides not to run, there might still be a Libertarian candidate in the Republican field. But a little bit of proper respect for the Republican field here. We have been talking a lot about their difficulties and where they are in the polls and so on. There are polls out in this past week, a McClatchy and Marist Institute poll, showing that both Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee are quite close as potential prospective opponents to Barack Obama in 2012. They're in the game. They're in single digits. Despite whatever problems we've identified with their candidacies, they're in there pitching with the President of the United States at this point in time.
I mean, we're talking about polls a year in advance, and of course, that's kind of, you know, we will roll our eyes on that. But the point is, the new Marist poll had Obama 46, Romney 45. In January, it was a 13-point spread. So same thing with Huckabee. President Obama had a 48 to 43 lead in the Marist poll. It was 12 points back in January. I don't know if suddenly Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney are doing such great things that have gotten them closer, or there is a certain decline in the job approval numbers of the president.
They are down. He had gotten up to 50%, 51% again in the early weeks of this year. Now he's slipped back down into the mid-40s, the low 40s in some polls, and record lows at about 41% in a couple of polls. So this has been another tough sled for the president. I agree with you. I don't think Romney is catching fire or Huckabee doing anything different. But what we do have are three wars now instead of two wars, $4 gas, $4.50 in some places. We have a conversation in Washington utterly dominated by the Republicans' best issue, cutting federal spending. So the president is drifting downward, and the Republican candidates are looking a little better.
I mean, the best thing, the argument I think that the White House and the Democrats have, or the argument that I think they're basing their campaign on is, well, maybe we're not so great, but look at Paul Ryan and the dismantling of Medicare. We can't allow that to happen. So in that sense, if you want to compare it to specifics, I mean, we talked about this with Harry Reid all the time. Harry Reid's numbers were in the toilet for the longest time, but until the Republicans came up with a candidate, that's what elected him. Otherwise, if you're running against Harry Reid versus anyone else, Harry Reid suffers. But when you run against Sharon Angle, he wins.
Well,
and I think some of the White House argument is that Obama against anybody could be trouble, but against a specific Republican, then he may do better than we expect.
Well, and when you say anybody else, we do have to toss out one more name. You mentioned Gary Johnson, and I think this was the proper time to salute his candidacy. But how about Judge Roy Moore? the former Supreme Court justice in the state of Alabama, who went down in the Ten Commandments controversy. He was trying to display the Ten Commandments in violation of Supreme Court orders. Ken, I believe you've been in the state of Alabama quite recently.
I was there this week. Matter of fact, I just on Wednesday I flew back from Alabama, and boy, was my Tuscaloosa. But Roy Moore, who had run for governor of Alabama, lost in the primary. I think he finished fourth in the Republican primary in 2010. Yet he announced an exploratory committee this week, and he's doing all the social issues.
For president now, right?
For president of the United States, right?
But for president of the United States.
I think he's using the presidency as a stepping stone to become governor of Alabama. I mean, that's what a lot of people do. But, I mean, Defense of Marriage Act, against gays in the military, all those social issues, not so much Tea Party issues, less economic, more social issues that Roy Moore is hoping to make a difference on.
All right. Well, politics on some other levels as well. In Congress right now, 2011, a lot of states are redrawing their districts to adjust to the new census numbers. And in Iowa, they have one of the most admirably clean and apolitical processes you could imagine for apportioning the districts. They don't let the legislators draw their own districts to make themselves happy and safe and incumbent. They have a commission that draws them, and that's coming up with some kind of interesting results for the incumbents.
They do. I think I was among one of maybe six or seven states that has these kind of commissions. I think New Jersey has it as well. But Iowa's results are in. They go from five congressional seats to four starting in 2013. And so basically what they've done is they've taken the two Republicans from the Republican West part of the state, Steve King and Tom Latham. They've merged those two districts together. And so Latham, rather than run against King in the Republican primary, which would, of course, split up, put him against his ally, Latham announced he's going to challenge Leonard Boswell in the 3rd District, which is basically centered around Des Moines. And Boswell had been a Republican target for a bunch of years, so that'll be a true one of those incumbent battles between an incumbent Republican and incumbent Democrat. It's going to be an interesting battle. And also, speaking of Iowa, Kristi Vilsack, who's the wife of former Governor Tom Vilsack, the agriculture secretary, she announced, or she's about to announce, that she's going to challenge Steve King in that Republican district, the 4th District. Now, I don't think she wins. I think this is a solid Republican district, but obviously there a lot of Democrats are feeling that 2012 is not going to be a repeat of 2010, and some Democrats think that Vilsack has a shot.
And in Senate races for 2012, Indiana, where normally Richard Lugar would be sweeping to re-election and the Democrats would have no shot at all, but there is a tight contest, we've talked about this before, between a Tea Party favorite, State Treasurer Richard Murdoch, who is challenging Lugar for the Republican nomination. Now, without prejudging how that's going to come out, a lot of people feel as though the core of the Republican Party in Indiana has moved away from Dick Lugar. They're not as happy with him anymore. They see him as being too moderate. They see him as being too friendly with Obama, too friendly with too many Democrats. And so if Murdoch has a shot, the Democrats could have a shot to take on Murdoch in the general election were he nominated.
Right, and the president of the Club for Growth, Chris Ciccola, who's a former Indiana congressman, suggested this week that Lugar retire rather than face what it looks like is going to be a very difficult race. If Democrats are smart, and actually I think they're talking about Congressman Joe Donnelly as a possible candidate, if the Democrats are smart, they're not going to sit back and watch this develop without coming up with a strong candidate of their own. That's how they won in Delaware, when Christine O'Donnell knocked off Mike Castle in the Republican primary, and Chris Coons, who's not a bad candidate, won that Senate seat. They want to make sure that they have a pretty strong Democrat in the event of a Republican turmoil.
Any kind of chance that Evan Bayh tries to make a comeback in Indiana, Ken?
No, they asked him that, too. He said, you know, there were some rumors that maybe he wanted to run for governor again because he was tired of Washington. And the governorship is open because Mitch Daniels is term limited. But it looks like there will be no Evan Bayh on the ballot in any race in 2012.
All right, a couple of remarkable stories from out in the states that we've been following. One in Arizona, where Governor Jan Brewer is best known to most people as the woman who signed into law Arizona's immigration bill a year or so ago that changed a lot of people's impression of Arizona and really shook up the whole immigration policy world. Jan Brewer was elected for her first elected term as governor in November, and a big controversy landed on her desk this past week that led her to make a move that surprised a few folks who only knew her from the immigration issue.
Well, this was the so-called Bertha bill. The legislature passed a bill that basically required presidential candidates to provide proof of citizenship, including providing a birth certificate, if they can get on the ballot. Now, As it is, Arizona's been under tremendous pressure from the business community, saying that our reputation has been tarnished by the anti-immigration bills, that we're losing tourists, we're losing tourist dollars. Let's not go overboard here. Jan Brewer herself said this bill was a bridge too far, which you kind of didn't expect from Jan Brewer, but she vetoed that bill. Now, not everybody is saying that. You know, Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, said that there's also a so-called Bertha bill going through the legislature there. He said that if they pass it, he will sign it. But, you know, there are a lot of Republicans like Karl Rove and Tim Pawlenty and Michelle Bachmann. I mean, all these Republicans saying this is not what we should be focusing on. This is an embarrassment. I guess some people think it's an embarrassment and others think maybe not.
And up in Wisconsin, where they have had the ongoing controversy over collective bargaining for public employees and Governor Walker, the surrogate fight over that was the fight for a Supreme Court seat. The election there in April was extraordinarily close. It appeared to have been won by the challenger. But now, with the appearance of more ballots from a Republican area in the Milwaukee suburbs, David Prosser, the incumbent justice, has been declared the winner. There appears to be a recount coming in that race.
Well, as of now, I mean, it looks like Prosser won by 7,316 votes. Now, in some ways, it's a defeat for Prosser because a couple of months ago, the feeling was he should have won in a landslide. He had a 20-point lead over Joanne Kloppenburg in the primary. But no matter whether it was 7,000 votes or 20,000 votes or 200 votes, the point is it shows that the state is still very much split over Governor Scott Walker's agenda.
And, of course, there were 1.5 million votes cast in this Supreme Court election, so we're inside of a 1% margin. It looks like there will be a recount in Wisconsin, keeping that particular pot boiling. Ken, we said goodbye to a couple of people, probably close to your heart, in the past week.
Well, I will tell you that they were two interesting characters, that's for sure. William Donald Schaefer, the former governor of Maryland, the former four-term mayor of Baltimore, who probably still thought of himself as mayor of Baltimore when he was the governor for 8 years. He died on Monday. He was 89 years old. I mean, he was madly in love with the city of Baltimore. He was there when Camden Yards was built, when the National Aquarium was built. He just loved his city. He felt like an alderman rather than a mayor. He was a different kind of politician. He was a quirky kind of guy. Sometimes he was outspoken. He certainly wasn't a conventional politician, but they certainly loved him in Baltimore.
I'm sure wherever he is, he still thinks of himself as the mayor of Baltimore, and also William Rusher.
Yes, William Rusher, a founder of the conservative movement. Actually, I could see William Rusher from my kitchen window. William Buckley hired him to be the National Review publisher in 1957. He helped found the Conservative Party of New York, I guess after somebody lost it, but he was, you know, behind the Barry Goldwater draft movement in 63, the American Conservative Union. You know, back in the 1940s, the conservatives were basically isolationists, and the new establishment of the conservative movement in this country with William F. Buckley, William Rusher was one of those founders. He died also in the last couple of days. He was 87 years old.
And you talk about things I'm old enough to remember personally. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron/Elving.
As you should be, and I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week, whether you have your birth certificate or not, for It's All Politics from NPR.